like, you're not grown enough to know.
I think you mentioned, like, when you're talking about multi-generational households and living there just now, but you said that, like, never being alone up until you were 30 was, like, a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
Can you, like, talk about how that foundation, like, was a good thing and how that kind of led you to be the person you are today and how it impacted you?
I'll start by saying, when my sister was lamenting that she had little people and she was having to go back to work, I said to her, Marcia, work now. It is when they are a teenager that you want to have the freedom to be able to take them to point A to point B so that you can be the eyes on them. And you're teenagers. You know what happens when you get to your teenage years. There's all kind of experimentation because you're trying to find who you are as a young adult. And when the foundation that happened for me during that time period, even though I had my driver's license and I was able to do certain things, but there was always someone with an eye. There was someone always who had my back. I may not have thought it was the best thing that there was always someone hanging around, but ultimately it was, because I realize now that it helped with me knowing how to make the correct choice for that moment in time. Because there was someone, if I was going to veer off, there would be a question asked. How will that outcome affect you? And if there aren't people around you, in your home, someone older than you that's seen life experiences, that can ask you a poignant question to help you think and develop your internal self differently, I know that the young people that you are today are not necessarily having those experiences all the time. In the moment that you need to have someone right there to support you, to let you know that you are loved and that you are cared for and that loved unconditionally. That's the real thing. Loved unconditionally is what I had. Now, I could be arguing with any one of the adults living in the household. I would call it an argument. They would just say, she's just being Catherine. But I was able to have that and to have those conversations that weren't there.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Makai, you're actually right on time.
Do you have a follow-up question?
Not exactly. I mean, I do have another question, but it's kind of switching gears a little bit to, like, your education and your time at the University of Cincinnati. And, like, we were kind of doing a little bit of background, like, digging into your life, and we were looking at how you were maybe the founder of Artworks or one of the founders of Artworks. Is that true?
I was... So if they say that in my Inquirer Woman of the Year, and I came on board actually the second full year, but I had been volunteering that first year.
Just with, like, your experience in the arts at UC and being an arts student there, and I guess I don't really know how to tie this into Artworks, but, like, how was that, like, being there as a, like, African-American woman?
The conservatory is an interesting place. It was a very interesting place. The department I was in was, they were preparing people to go to Broadway, is what their goal was. I just loved singing and dancing. And I knew that it wasn't going to look like that for me. And I don't know if you know, but I'm a African American with big boobs, wide hips, and big thighs. So I'm not your typical Broadway style person. So again, when we talk about those walking in two worlds, right, wrong, or indifferent, there was a mandatory class every day for musical theater students. And on many days, the head of the department would get right in front of me as I'm flat on the ground doing my leg extensions and going, you need to lose weight. You'll never make it. So it was a very tumultuous time for me, as well as I didn't want to join a black sorority, and I didn't, but I joined a sorority. So there was also that was going on, because, you know, campuses, you find your, these days they call it your tribe, You know, you find your group that you groove with and you hang out. And when you are new to a place, you know, they're trying to, you're finding out who you are and visiting different groups to see how do I connect here, how do I connect there. And it was a little trying, in all honesty.
Why didn't you want to join a black sorority?
I did not want to walk a line. Do you all know what walking the line is?
Yeah.
So the walking the line is that when you join a African-American sorority, there is a bonding that happens that will never be broken from the line. But it means that it's one thought, that everybody who's pledging in that time, everything is about you working as one and getting to the end goal of crossing the pledge line. That wasn't me.
Makaya, I think we're actually to you now.
All right, so we're looking into your business, Miller Hair Debt, I believe it's pronounced, and we just wanted to know like what it is, because on Google we found a few different things, and we weren't really sure which one was true. What led you to open it? What does it have to offer?
So Miller Gardette was officially established on September 18th, 1991, when Charles Edward Miller planted a smack right here on Catherine Denise Gardette's lips. So that's when it happened. That's when it was established. And the Miller Gardette that you're thinking of is the evolution of being invested in our community. And it's been 5 years. So this is actually the picture of our closing, when this is Miss Daisy Macon and Miss Daisy owned the first African American salon and spa in Cincinnati, and this is her husband Reverend Macon, and that's Bobby Charles Miller, and these were our real estate agents, and at the time, Charles and I had probably lived in the neighborhood for almost 20 years at that point, and we saw development coming back in our business district, and he was lamenting how no one who lives in the neighborhood was investing in the neighborhood. So we literally invested in the neighborhood. We bought a building, not knowing specifically what we were going to put in that building. At one point, we're thinking of a general store. I mean, it was all different sorts of things that went through our mind. Ultimately, we realized that it was just an extension of who we are as creatives and civic activists and advocates for many things. So we still have the first floor, we call it the salon. And on the salon, on Monday mornings at 8 a.m., there is Monday morning mindfulness that we sit in silence for 30 minutes. And on Thursday evenings at 8:30, there is City Silence, where again, we come and sit in silence for 30 minutes. And Baba Charles is a percussionist. And so in the percussion world, he has a youth class on Saturday mornings, an adult class on Saturday mornings. He has Baba's Beats and Brews on Wednesdays evenings, where the professional percussionists of Cincinnati literally just come and hang out and talk about rhythm and play with each other and the conversation that they've been having these days is what is the hand drum rhythm that we are creating as a legacy. And so they've been talking and experimenting and researching, and it's fascinating in that way. And then also community-wise, we hold or host the working group. In Walnut Hills, we have an organization that is made up of membership from our business group, our area council, and our redevelopment foundation that meet once a month to talk about development that's happening in the neighborhood. And that is before it goes out to the masses, so that if it's something that those representatives know that really wouldn't be fitting for the neighborhood, that would have struggle in the neighborhood, that needs some reworking, retooling, that it can start there before it actually goes out to the broader community. And yet those individuals that sit on that working group are responsible for taking that information back out to their entities. And we have a boutique. So there are artists who live in the neighborhood or friends of ours that have items in our boutique. So we have not, Saturday is the best day that we're there. We're open by appointment, and it's also utilized as, I say, a small boutique event place. I always say a baker's dozen. So this past Saturday we hosted a Christmas holiday, but we've done things such as, and Akila Smart, who is James Baldwin's niece, who wrote a book on foodways. We hosted her for a book conversation when she was in town, when her uncle's movie, I Am Not Your Negro, was in town. So we do small things like that. And we call it Miller Gardette, the connecting spot. And I'm going to tell you a connecting story. So back to James Baldwin. Dear friend of mine, who I grew up with here in Cincinnati, is a voiceover artist. And he is the artist that did James Baldwin's book and has read many of James Baldwin's books. But he's never met any of James Baldwin's family. He happened to be in town the same weekend that James Baldwin's niece was in town. And he was planning to come see us. He lives in New York, and he was planning to come see us. So we just stopped through. And this event was, I can't even remember if you two were there. So the book thing was like from 2 to 4. They didn't leave until 10 p.m. We ended up, we completely rechanged the room. We set up tables. We went and got Gomez's, one of the restaurants in our neighborhood. We went and got Gomez. We put up two tables. There were 12 of us sitting around the table. They got to connect. They called James Baldwin's sister on the phone and had a conversation. And that friendship and partnership is now blossomed. And so that's the, this past weekend I played matchmaker with people that were there. I mean, it's just, it's the connecting spot.
So my question was, what changes have you seen in the neighborhood from childhood to now?
How long do you have?
Put it in like a compact.
In a compact. Imagine, if you will, I've been coming to Walnut Hills. I grew up in Evanston. And I've been coming to Walnut Hills since I was a little girl because my mother loved Ebony Records and she loved Nate's Jewelry at the Thatch Roof. And if you know the intersection of McMillan and Gilbert, where the corner building, well, right next to the corner building, I think it says Soul Food is the sign that says now, well, that was Thatched Roof was there. Actually, I take that back. It's where it says Zweets on the wall. That's where Thatched Roof was. And then where Ebony Records was probably like 5 doors down. And that was on our way downtown that we would stop and Mom would get the latest Aretha Franklin, Nancy Wilson, bless her soul, Earth, Wind, and Fire, James Cleveland, you know, and it was just part of what happened. So there was shops, literally from where Beck's Hardware is, all the way down to where Skyline is. There was just businesses on both sides of the street, and it was flourishing, flourishing, flourishing. And when I moved into the neighborhood, there were 20,000 people living in the neighborhood. And I had a cart. I was the cart lady. And my Saturdays literally would be spent on McMillan. You know, we had a couple of vegetable stands that we could go to. There was Louis Meats where I could go get my fish and poultry. There was actually a fish place that you could go to. The Kroger's was there. We had a florist. I mean, it was just, you could just spend the day. And then all of a sudden, one by one, you realize, oh, they're gone. Oh, they're gone. And then you see, oh, they moved. Oh, where'd they go? And then the census comes out, and you realize, oh, we've lost residents. And the next census tract comes out, oh, we lost more. To where we got down to under 6,000 people in our neighborhood. And there was a core that stayed. Now, one of the beauties of Walnut Hills is that we have families that have been there, African-American families, that have been there 4, 5, 6 generations. I have neighbors that have been in that house that they live in for 6 generations. So I've seen that. And I've seen the conversation of how Walnut Hills is not a place that you want to be. And I've always been there. And then I've seen that because of location, 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 because people and the world has evolved, when you think of, and I, as I've been doing some review of saying, when did this really, the significant change start to happen? It is when the recession started to come out and people of in the business world realize there are things that we can do so that we're not so far away from our jobs. So the people who still live in suburbia and work in suburbia, they're out there. But the people who live in the work in the city, they decided we want to come back to the city. And in addition to that, we had businesses moving in and expanding, and we go back to location, location, location. Walnut Hills is the best location in this city. We're up on a hill. You have views. We have the best park in the city. We have the museum. You know, if it is. We got in Walnut Hills. In Walnut Hills. They may try to say that it's downtown or Mount Adams, but I'm telling you, I have a picture. If you look at the history, it says that the Longworths donated the land to Walnut Hills for Eden Park to be built. It's the best park, right? It's the best park. So it goes back to the, not only do we have location, 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 we got the goods. That it can be, and when you think of the resurgence of being a walkable community, hello? So there's been this resurgence. Now, is that resurgence equitable for all? You know the answer. But the flip side of that is, how do we make it equitable for all? Because if you've done research on me, then you've probably seen in that Cincinnati Inquirer article that I believe, or the Cincinnati Magazine article, that I believe it can be equitable for all. But the only way it can be equitable for all is if all of us get at the table. That those who, and for me, I say, I want the independent pharmacist who's on the corner and the CEO of the business in the neighborhood at the same table talking about what do you want for your neighborhood. Because that independent pharmacist is an independent pharmacist for a reason. You all know what I'm talking about when I'm talking about an independent pharmacist?
Yeah.
He's that for a reason. What do we need to do as a community? Let's not even talk about a school. But as a community, what do we need to do to ensure that your best and highest good can be displayed in this community? Because not everybody wants to be a millionaire, but everybody wants to live with a roof over their head, a flushing toilet, turn on the faucet and the water runs, a warm bed on a cold night, and a cold room on a hot night. We all want that, no matter what we do.
So we've seen that you served as President of Walnut Hills Area Council and the former president of Walnut Hills Development Foundation. So what motivated you to become a leader in your community?
It wasn't a thought. I first volunteered at the age of 3. So giving back has just always been what you do. You volunteer where your passion lies. And so that's the thing I'd say to all of you. If you, right now, don't do it because it's the right thing to get on your college resume so you can get into school. Do it because it's something that you're passionate about. So it doesn't matter where you go in the world, you can tap into that passion and already have a cohort, a tribe that you can connect with. Whether it's the arts, there are so many arts organizations, social service, if it's little people, there are so many ways that you can give back. For me, it was in my neighborhood, in my community. What's a better way to serve than serve in my neighborhood?
What did you do at 3 years old?
At 3 years old, so back in the day, there was this little thing called the Jerry Lewis Telethon. And in the early, early days of the Jerry Lewis Telethon, people would go door to door and collect money. And then there on the collection day, because it was always on Labor Day, you would go and you would deposit all the money that you collected at a point house. And my family's house was the point house for the Jerry Lewis Telethon. And my job was to separate the coins into like coinage. And then as I got older, it was to wrap the coins. And it was, I thought, even though it was volunteering, but it also was learning that hand-eye coordination and, you know, grouping. See, my grandmother and my mom, they had it down. But when you start giving back at a young age, it's just what you do.
With the new investment happening in Walnut Hills, do you have any, like, fears or hopes for the future?
Personally, I step away from fear, hope, and expectation. So I do have expectations. And my expectation for my neighborhood is that we will find a way to be equitable for all. That we will find a way that with all the development that is coming in. So I'm going to answer that and take a step back. Public-private development is what brought development into my neighborhood. But now private development is what has taken over in my neighborhood. And when private developers, if there is a variance that they need, then they come to the community council. But if they're able to follow the form-based codes that we have, they're able to just do their developments as they want. So my expectation is that we will have developers that are not coming in just building for high end. That we will have developers that come in and realize what is missing, what housing stock is missing in our neighborhood. And if that means that it's not just the private developers coming in, but it's our nonprofit development corporation that we have in the neighborhood doing that really what is missing survey, and going after developers to help with that. I want it to be that it doesn't matter that I look different than you, that you speak to me. Because that truly is what I see diminishing. That as new residents are moving into the neighborhood, they're not coming to those third places and making community. And they're not coming to the area council so that they really can see what's going on. Because the reality is that most people live on their phones. Now, I don't know how you are in class, but if the teacher doesn't have your attention in 5 seconds, are you doodling or doing something else? Mm-hmm. So imagine that I believe that same sort of thing could be happening with some of our new residents, that they're distracted. And because they're distracted, they're not paying attention. And they're just being in their own world, but they're offending the culture of the neighborhood. Because the culture of the neighborhood is, we say hello. We wave. You know? We're human. You know, human to human contact, relationships, that's the important thing in this world, having relationships. And hopefully the relationships we have are positive and help each party of that relationship move forward.
From what you've seen in your life so far, what comparisons can you make, or what would you like to say about our current political climate, whether that's on a regional or national level?
This symbol right here is the symbol of civic responsibility. I designed with Adinkra symbols from Ghana, West Africa. And Adinkras were documented in the War of 1817 between Ghana and Britain. And the proverb of this symbol is, it is my responsibility to help build up my government. And we each need to do that. The current political climate is very unique to me in that, are we following the law of government? Or are we bending the law of government? And if you are of the ilk that we are bending the law of government, what is that going to do to this republic? Because we're not truly a democracy. We're a republic. And my thought is that we are doing a disservice by not being those in Washington, those in Columbus, those in downtown Cincinnati, that we do a disservice if we aren't clear about what we're doing. And I find it that we each need to stand up for all that we're doing in the political world, whatever your belief is. So my thing is, it's not important to me if you're of the Green Party, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, the Independent Party. Are you of the Vote Party? Are you of the Speak Up Party? Are you of the Call Party? Are you of the Right Party, as in right? Because that's what makes a difference.
I'm teaching the 6 principles of the U.S. Constitution to 8th graders right now. And I'm not fortunate enough to be teaching this fine group of people. And it's so detached, like the concept of popular sovereignty, the idea that it is the people that drive and should, the government should be beholden to. That's just detached. Oh. We think it's a separate thing.
Yeah.
Not that we are guiding them.
Yeah. I know that I have written, I have called, because being an advocate, first off, all of us should be advocates. If you don't know what district you're in, even before you are 18 and able to vote, go to the Hamilton County Board of Education website, put in your address, and see who your elected officials are. How do they align with your values? How do they align with your family's values? How do they align with the city's values, with your neighborhood's values? I mean, there's a culture that I suspect if I asked each of you to tell me what's the culture of your neighborhood, you'd be able to give me that. But are the elected officials down at City Hall, are they supporting your neighborhood's culture? And if they aren't, what are you doing? That's the advocacy part. That's the civic responsibility part. That didn't completely answer your question, though, did it? Or was that, whose question was that? The political climate.
No, I think that answered my question.
I think one that got skipped over was just, Joanne showed us some pictures related to your life and Wanna Hills. One was your house on Ruth Avenue, mm-hmm. which is, as a Wanna Hills graduate, so close to Wanna Hills, but yet you went to Seven Hills. Mm-hmm. We were just kind of interested in that.
Yes. So I am the product of an educator. And that educator, so this is like back in the 70s when I was, no, in the 60s when I was in elementary school, my mother was not going to have me going to Hoffman or Parham. Because they were not going to give her child the education that she wanted her child to have. So I went to Clifton. but we didn't live in Clifton. You can figure that one out. And then it came time for seventh grade, and Mom looked at Walnut, she looked at who I was, and she was like, nah, big school, not you. And it's true, I'm not a big school person. I'm not a big crowd kind of person. So we looked at options. One was boarding school. Thank heavens that one didn't come to fruition. And it was Seven Hills. And it was interesting, again, my mother having the forethought of, she wanted me to have the education she wanted me to have. And I realized that part of that education was, how do you walk in the world once you're out of high school, once you're out of college, with people who really are at a different level than you are? And so I went to Seven Hills. And for seventh and eighth grade, there were a few other students of color. And then in ninth grade, so I also lived through a merger. And the merger caused an exodus of students as well. There were two schools, Hillsdale Lots Beach and the College Preparatory School. And they merged and created the Seven Hills Schools, which is the Doherty campus on Johnstone right off of Madison Road, and then the middle school and upper school on Red Bank Road. Well, the middle school didn't even exist when, back in 78, 79, just wasn't there. So it was a very unique, because there were only 48 of us. My 40th high school reunion is this year.
So were there other students of color in the upper grades besides you?
I was the only one in my class, and in the class behind me, I think they had a couple. There was never more than three or four, and classes are very small. So they're about 50. 60 at the max, which is much different than today. Today, an average class size is in the 90s. And they say that their minority student population has expanded. I vocally protest in that, yes, on paper, because you have East Indians, yes, you have increased your minority population, but you truly have not increased the socioeconomic population of your school. Because I went in a time when there wasn't even scholarships, which also helped with that multi-generational, because they said, you know, no house payment. My grandparents bought that house in 1944. So with no house payments, you're able to pay a tuition.
Did you enjoy your time there when you were there, though?
Like, I did. High school? I did. So Seven Hills, it was a well-rounded experience. Academics, arts, and sports had equal importance. And I don't even think they're able to do that now with how they've grown. But equal importance really meant that I was a well-rounded individual when I graduated and moving on to college.
I think the bell's gonna...
Yeah, we gotta watch that.
I would love to post for a picture of the bell. Can we do that?
I'll just come around.
Sue would be so angry if another one of our get-togethers ended with no picture.
Oh my gosh.